What the Tech is brought to you by Gigapoints. Gigapoints is a site that helps you find the best credit card. Gigapoints uses data to pinpoint the cards that'll give you the most points based on your actual spend. See how much you could earn at gigapoints.com/Andrew. Everybody, welcome to What the Tech. I'm Andrew Zarian. Of course, I'm joined by Mr. Paul Theroux. How you doing, Paul?
I don't know. pretty good. How are you?
You couldn't even get it out. You could not
get it
out.
Hold on. I can do this.
Yeah. Do it. Do it.
Yeah. Pretty good. Pretty good. Hold on. Okay. Let's see what it got. Me. Pretty good.
Ah, it's so good to see you today, Paul. What a disastrous
morning. Andrew, if we were in person, I would be clutching you like a baby to his mother and crying.
I tend to do that to you right before you leave from Penn Station.
Yes, right.
It's the same exact thing.
Right.
I've had the kids all day, and I realized that I have marker all over my hands.
Yeah, nice.
I'm just covered in marker. My kids are just, I have no idea how it happened. It's just marker everywhere. I gave them some lunch, and I said, Daddy's locking himself in his office. See you later. That was it. And now my wife's watching them. So a big week for tech reviews and tech journalism right now. Mm-hmm. A lot of the Surface Duo review units have gone out. I know that there's an embargo on a lot of the stuff that people want to hear. But we're going to do our best to kind of tiptoe around some of that stuff and to kind of summarize on this device. Because, you know, last week we discussed the device. And I'm not going to say we poo-pooed on the device, but it was a little bit of an honest discussion as to who this device appeals to, right?
So, by the way, I'm sorry to interrupt. I'm glad you started that way because I actually kind of want to address that. Unfortunately, in the world that I live in, which is kind of the Windows enthusiast world, the Microsoft enthusiast world, or the broader world of tech enthusiasts, I guess, you know, people tend to just kind of want it because it's the new thing and it's different and you never know and blah, blah, you know, that kind of thing. And I feel like the conversation we had and my general assessment of this is I'm still kind of waiting on Microsoft or some user, maybe some reviewer to come out with a thing where they say, look, here are the 5 areas or the 10 areas or whatever it is where this thing is so much better than any other device that I have to use it. And my point is only, I've never seen it and I can't imagine it myself. Yeah. But I don't want people to think that, like, we're done thinking about it, right? Because those reviews are going to come in and people are going to buy them and I'm going to hear from them and we're going to hear from them. And that could happen. I just don't want people to come away with the wrong idea that, like, which is that we're just negative on it or we don't like it or whatever. It's not that. We're just questioning. Yeah, wondering.
We did the show and I thought it was a very honest discussion about a device that a lot of people are excited about. And generally when you see something new come out, people get very excited and they tend to be either one-sided or it's either one side or the other. Either
people and say my point is not to throw cold water on those people. That's not the point at all.
Yeah. I didn't think that we were negative, but I did get some feedback. No,
I get this as well.
And I kind of understood where people were coming from, but the approach was, who is this device for, right? That's what I've been asking. Who is this device for? And I got a couple answers, so we could talk about that, obviously, because there are a lot of people that are very much into the dual screen aspect of it. And I can understand, but I'm more curious about the real world case studies, right? People using it daily, which we're going to see in the next couple of weeks with a lot of these reviews that go out. So Brad got a review unit. Mm-hmm. Mary Jo Foley got a review unit. Obviously, I think part of the embargo is that you can't show the operating system, right?
You can't show the software at all. All you can do is show the device.
The device. Yeah. Which is weird because we have seen the software.
Well, here's the first bit of positivity I will flash with regards to this device. So that's an interesting thing that Microsoft asked. You can spend the next 2 weeks with it, but you can't discuss the software experience at all, which is, of course, what everyone's the most interested in. Why would they do that? So I have, this is my theory. I have often criticized the world of tech reviews in these modern days, where some guy with a flashy YouTube video will get on and after 3 days with some device will opine at length with of how great or how terrible. Yeah, right. So I have a big problem with that. My own device reviews, I try to spend as much time as with them as I can. I often will check in over time and say, this is what's happening. And I, you know, it's hard these days, but of course with a laptop or a phone, going out in the world is not the same as it used to be. Mm-hmm. So it's harder to do things like battery life and whatever, but try to have a real world assessment. What Microsoft is essentially forcing on these reviewers is what I've always done. Right. So I that may trigger a different assessment than they would have had after a quickie couple of days.
Well,
right?
Yeah, I think what it's done is it's prevented mm-hmm. The knee jerk reaction, which knee-jerk. You need to do to get the hits, yep. right? If you're talking about right. getting the hits and getting the most views on this, you want to get that yep. review out as fast as possible. And
I brought up Spotify and then like, no, this thing sucks. And I think they want people to spend time with it and say, oh. And by the way, I should say the positive part of this really is, I it suggests to me anyway, that Microsoft believes that if people do spend time with it, they'll come around to it, right? That even the people that might have been negative off the cuff will say, oh, actually, this is really useful or whatever. You know, and that's, I'm projecting a little bit, but I think it suggests maybe that Microsoft feels good enough about this thing that if people just give it the time of day and not do what they normally do, yeah. which is move on to the next shiny bauble a day later, the reviews might reflect that. So, you know, I don't mean to toot my own horn or whatever, but that's what I always do. But, you know, yeah. whatever. So good.
Yeah, there's a lot to talk about this. So, and I want to do it uninterrupted mm-hmm. because there's a couple different angles. Well, I don't want to cut into a break, right? Because I think we're going to dive headfirst into this.
I'm sorry, Andrew. Do you not want to interject?
I don't want you interjecting at all, Paul. And I see. I'm going to do the talking for the next 45 minutes.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I don't want to. I think there's a really serious discussion to be had about the approach with that. And I'm curious if other tech companies are going to start doing that, because something that I just had a conversation with HP to send me over some more product units so I could do long-term mm-hmm. usage, especially on the show. Right. And the guy that I spoke to at HP was, mm-hmm. He's like, well, where can I see the review that you did previously? I'm like, well, it's not a one-off review. It's a long-term usage. So Paul and I will discuss, like, I bring up that I use that HP, which, by the way, here it is, because I use it every day. I talk about the good and the bad, and I use it as a comparison measure for other laptops that I use. And mm-hmm. And a lot of our viewers are enterprise users. A lot of them are hardcore tech enthusiasts. So they would appreciate a long-term review over the quick, 20-minute, assessment of what this device is. And I sent that email. I haven't heard back, but I'm sure they're going to understand. They're going to send it. Mm-hmm. But I like to do things a little bit differently. And I'm hoping doing an embargo like this, where you send out the unit and you talk about the aesthetics of it first, and then everybody has to wait to put their review out without having this knee-jerk reaction, my God, man, maybe that makes sense, right? Maybe it makes sense for people to hold back a little bit and not give an instantaneous response to something that's so guttural.
I can't wait to read one review that says something like, I usually just hammer these things out after a couple of days, but as it turns out,
this is the way to do
everyone
it.
Is, they're in such a race to be first, and to put their little spin on it, I live in this world. Like, I understand that aspect of it, but you need to spend time with something to understand it better. I just don't how I feel about this stuff. It makes me crazy that's what this is reduced to, because they're always looking at the next thing. It's like an animal looking for, or like my dog looks for her next treat, mm-hmm. It's like, I was good. I get something, right? Wag the tail, she's all excited. And it's like, what's next? It's like, hold on a second. This is a potentially important device.
Yeah, very. I think a lot of these devices, and it's, mm-hmm. I'm going to give an example after the break. And I'm curious how this is going to play out, because there's no comparison between these two devices, except for the fact that they are different for the sake of being a little different, which I'll bring up after the break. But before we continue, guys, we got a new advertiser, a new sponsor here on the show, and I want to welcome Gigapoints to the show. I heard about Gigapoints from another podcast a while back. So I had made a big mistake, and this is not on the live read, obviously, and this is a personal story. Paul, I'm one of those crazy people that never had credit cards. I did not. I had a credit card when I was 22, and I just decided one day that I really wasn't going to use a credit card. And boy, was that a mistake. You know when it's a real big mistake? When you're applying for a mortgage and you really have no credit history and everything. So I was like, you know what? I got to get a credit card. This is like a couple of years ago. And it was a real pain in the butt to find out what card is great for me. A lot of sites do this comparison of, you know, what it is, but it's not really customized for you. And what Gigapoints does is that it really finds the right credit card for you in order for you to save or earn, I should say, either hundreds or even thousands of dollars in rewards a year. The first credit card that I got gave me no rewards. Actually, I use a card. I'm not going to say which card it is, but a lot of people got this card recently, and I stopped using it because the rewards were so bad once I checked out what Gigapoints was suggesting that I use, and I flipped over and I used a different card. But you kind of want to save as much money as you want, and you want to kind of get as much you want, depending on if you like the free travel or the cash back, and that's what Gigapoints does. There's no answering a bunch of questions, which is great, or doing a lot of research. Simply create an account. You receive your recommendations within a few minutes, and Gigapoints algorithm does all the work for you. Gigapoints never sees any of your login information or details regarding your credit card or bank information. It uses the same tools that Venmo, American Express, and Coinbase use. Your bank information is encrypted and secure during the process, and it maximizes the personal reward potential. So whether you like to travel, it finds that for you. It's not a one-size-fits-all approach like other credit card sites that find you cards that match perfectly for you. These guys actually put in a lot of effort in the algorithm to give you the card that's great for you. And here's a great offer, right? To see how much you could earn on your credit card each year, go to gigapoints.com/Andrew. That's GIGApoints.com/Andrew and find out. When I put my information in, I was blown away on how much money I was technically losing by not using this card. You know who's a smart person? My wife. And that's the card that my wife had picked out for herself. So it actually shows you the difference between me and her. She was able to find the right card. It took me years to discover it. And thanks to Gigapoints for helping me with that. great service, great tool. And I highly recommend it if you're looking to, you know, kind of find out if you could kind of save a couple bucks here and earn rewards, a little bit more rewards than you're actually earning. Also, here's another thing. If you put in your information and you happen to have a card, they're not going to do an upsell approach. They're going to tell you like, oh, your card is great for you, which is phenomenal. Gigapoints.com/Andrew. Find out how much more you could be earning in points on your credit card each year by going to gigapoints.com/Andrew. So, Paul.
Yes.
You know, I don't know why, but this thought came to mind when I'm seeing all these reviews come out. I thought of the Palm Pre, okay? That when the Palm Pre came out, it really turned into who could do the review the fastest. Yeah. Who's going to be able to do that first review and give that offhand reaction? And of course, the reaction was, it's not an iPhone. You know, so like I was thinking, there are so many products out there that would benefit from the fact that the embargo prevents a quick reaction and it actually allows you to use the device. And I really hope this is going to be a future approach that a lot of these companies take.
Yeah, right, right.
Right?
Companies often do take this approach, but they don't usually make it go out so far, right? Generally speaking, like Samsung or someone will hand out the first round of devices to reviewers, and then they have 3 to 5 days at most, you know? Yeah, I think dictating an amount of time, like up to 2 weeks, is a great idea for sure.
Yeah. So anything you could touch on this that you've noticed with the device that you can talk about?
I mean, right. So this is all secondhand, of course, because I've talked to Mary Jo and Brad, and they've, you know, shown me the devices and so forth. What they both said is that it's heavier than expected. Thinner. I mean, it's very thin when open, right? And so that's something Microsoft was very proud about, kind of bragged about in their announcement. And it is very thin. I think more than, I don't know, there aren't really any new observations. It's kind of slippery. So the bumper case, the bumper board or whatever you want to call that, is probably there mostly to prevent it from slipping around. It helps it stay a little grippier in your hand. It's, you know, if you hold it up next to a phone, it's wider and taller usually than most phones. It's a lot wider than all phones. Yeah, it's
way wider.
It's taller than most phones. So there's a pocket problem, you know. And, you know, one of the things I run into in reviewing products is, you know, a review is an opinion, you know, and that opinion is as educated or not educated as you want it to be. I mean, it's up to the person reviewing, right? But like I said, you know, in trying to spend time with products, et cetera, I feel like over the years, I've been reviewing hardware for 20 years now. I feel like I have kind of a handle on it, you know, but, and what that means is I'm not always, I mean, of course, there's always some element of this, but I'm not always, I don't review a product for me. Although if a product is good enough, of course, I look at it in that light. Like, was this something I would want to own? Like, do I want to keep using this?
Yeah.
And every once in a while, like a tech product will come down the pike where it's like, yeah, like this is something I'm going to get for myself. I'm going to keep using this over a long period of time. But I feel like you have to have kind of an understanding of a wide number of use cases for any device and who might this be good for, who might it not be good for. So with phones in particular, you know, one of the interesting stories this year, aside from the dual screen folding screen devices, has been the return of smaller screen devices that tend to be much less expensive, like the Pixel 4a or the iPhone SE. And then, of course, there were small screen devices from, you know, Samsung A series and, Motorola, you know, as an example. They all sell, you know, smaller screen, less expensive devices as well. So there's kind of a market in there. But, you know, the problem is when you review a device like the Note 20 Ultra, which I just got, or the new OnePlus phones or the iPhones that are coming out, like the iPhone Max, you know, Pro Max, whatever that's called. They're very big. And you'll hear from people who are like, I don't know why anyone would want a phone that big. You know, I want something that can fit in my pocket, you know. And I do this semi-playfully, but really, I mean, I wonder about how people optimize things. Like, in other words, like, it fitting in your pocket is so important that you're optimizing your purchase for the time when you're not using it. Like, what you're saying is, even though you're not even acknowledging whatever benefit a big screen may have. You're literally saying, well, it's uncomfortable in my pocket, which is when I'm not using it, and I'm going to buy a smaller screen for that reason.
Yeah.
It's like, what? So, you know, it's like I have a small garage, so I can't own a truck. And even though I work at a construction site every day, I'm going to buy a Prius because that fits in the garage. It's like, okay. You know, it's kind of a weird train of thought, I think. So what that all means, the reason I bring all that up is,
well, the other
this thing doesn't, problem. Sorry, hold on. Let me just, yeah. Wait, hold on. I'm sorry. I just want to just, no, let me just complete the thought on this. What that means is if someone's not going to buy this because it doesn't fit in their pocket. I mean, I don't know. What's the, you know, why? Like, well, I mean, you should buy this because of what it does. You know what I mean? Not because of what it isn't when you're not using it. If it's good enough, you can just carry it like a little pocketbook or a little laptop, right?
Well, I think that's how most people are going to use it. I don't see this replacing their phone. If that's the discussion here, I don't think this is going to be a secondary device for most people that are purchasing this. Not all. Again, I'm not saying all, but I think for some, the other big problem here is the price point, right? But if you look at the price point, how much more is it than an iPhone?
It's not. I mean, look, realistically, you know? How much more is it than a Samsung Note Ultra? It's not. Yeah, it's the same price. Not. So a couple things to that, because what you just said is super important. And I feel like we might have talked about this, but this is so central to this conversation. When Steve Jobs introduced the iPad, remember, he said, we thought about whether there could be a third device, right? Now, for me, that is the record scratch moment, because what people need to hear from that statement, and they did not hear, was Apple, which makes all of its money by selling hardware, thought is there a way we could sell another piece of hardware to people? No one kind of caught that, right? Because why would you think, do we need another device? Like, why would you even think that? Does it replace one of the other devices? No, it's another device. Sometimes you'll use a laptop. Sometimes you'll use a phone. But sometimes there's this third device. And because we make devices, that's how we see the world. So I thought that part of that was kind of crappy. But the next thing he said was, we knew, and I'm paraphrasing him, it's not literally probably the next thing he said, but then he says, we knew for this device to make sense, it had to do things better than both a phone and a laptop. And then he provided a list, email, web browsing, blah, 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 whatever it was. And then he went on a string of demos where he demonstrated, proved his point, that this is better at these central tasks. So the first thing that you had just said was, this isn't going to replace a phone for most people. And I got to say, that's a problem. Because for this thing to make sense, I think it has to replace a phone. It should replace a phone. It should be able to do most of what a phone does, as good or better. And then it should do additional stuff. If this is just another device, we already have another device. It's called a tablet. Like you could swivel an iPad in landscape mode and see two apps side by side. Why do we need, what's the point of another thing that does this? Right?
Yeah. I'm fascinated by the device. I'm curious to see who will end up using it. Now, the other thing is a big problem that I'm seeing with it is that there's no subsidized pricing for the carriers, right? There's no carrier $49 a month plan for this device. And I think that's part of the issue when people discuss the pricing.
Yeah.
When people talk about how expensive it is, I obviously, not everybody's buying an iPhone 11 Pro Max with 500 gigs
every year
of storage year. That's not a reality. But there are a lot of people that are buying it. So this phone was $1,200, the one that I have right now, $1,200 or $1,300. Mm-hmm. You don't really notice it because you're paying X amount per month. I believe AT&T has a $48 plan for it right now. I haven't seen it on Verizon with that plan, but you know, when you're talking about a pricing issue, I think that issue is that number is right on Microsoft's website, which where everybody's going to pre-order this thing, right?
They're not because you get it financed and
So no, when they see the $1,500 price tag, that's what their eyes go for. When you go to a carrier and the carrier tells you it's $49 for the next 24 months, it's an illusion that you're paying less, but it works when it comes to selling a device.
But see, that's why I feel it's very important. Look, this first version is going to be kind of a limited release. It literally is targeting Surface fans who live in the Microsoft app ecosystem. It's a very specific and small audience. And they'll get feedback. And Microsoft did this with HoloLens. And by the time HoloLens 2.0 came around, all of a sudden there were vertical markets where this product made sense. They fine-tuned the product. They made some improvements, especially to the field of view. V2 was a huge improvement. Surface has this experience with the Pro form factor. It wasn't until V3 where it was like, oh my God, this thing is obvious now. It makes a lot of sense and it's going to sell well. So that could absolutely happen here. But I really feel like it's so crucial. If you're going to replace something, it has to do all of those things. And I don't, you know, look, we all have our own little pet peeves or the things we care about the most or whatever. But when you look at the flagship smartphone market, it is a fact. It's not my opinion. The number one selling feature on these things is cameras, period. And the problem for Microsoft is this thing that's sort of a phone but not a phone, that costs as much as the most expensive phones on earth, basically, doesn't have a good camera, you know? And I don't think anyone would probably turn to Microsoft for the best camera experience. I mean, I don't think we have any reasonable expectation of that, but it needs to at least be competitive. And I don't feel like they tried there at all.
Yeah, because I believe this is a secondary device. It's not your primary.
Yeah, phone. And that might be one of the reasons why that's the case. So if that's, and by the way, so you're right. There's no doubt about that. So the justification for a $1,400 secondary device is a little more complicated, right? Because when you spend $1,250 on an iPhone or $1,500 or $1,400 or whatever it is on a Samsung, you know you're going to use that thing for a couple of years, 3 years, 4 years now, maybe even longer. Who knows? Let's say 3 years is the average probably because of the life cycle support. But you're going to use that thing all the time, all the time. It's on you. It's personal. It's hard to justify that for a secondary device. right?
Yeah.
No one who buys one is not going to have a computer too. You know, so you have an Android phone or an iPhone, you have a laptop. Now you have this thing. And I don't know. I mean,
well, something
isn't that
else
market kind of sewn up?
I feel like, yeah. What I'm seeing, though, which I'm very, there's a bigger story to this, right? And a lot of that is the Android-Microsoft relationship that we have now.
Yes.
I find to be very interesting for the future of both you know, products for Android-based operating system and devices and for Microsoft as a company. There is this is the fork in the road that Microsoft has decided to go down. And I'm glad about that because I think a partnership between Microsoft and Android to create devices like this allows them to create a unique experience that nobody else is able to provide. And that's kind of what sells phones, right? Something that you're able to do better or differently than other people.
You know,
I want to know what that relationship is going to be like when people start using this device and how it's going to integrate within Windows itself.
Yeah. This is such a weird area. Unfortunately for Microsoft or fans of this particular product, you're actually going to have a better experience if you buy a Samsung device, right? Because Microsoft has a partnership with Samsung and they get features first. And for right now, at least, there's a feature like the ability to run apps off the phone on your computer that's only available on Samsung. So I don't believe there are any particular... In fact, no, I'm sorry. Let me state that more firmly. There are literally no integration pieces that are unique to Surface Duo with regards to a computer. So I guess what I'd say is there are two levels to this. You said there's no one else who can offer the level of integration between these two things that Microsoft can. That's true. The problem is that level of integration necessary, right? So the level of integration you're talking about is between Microsoft apps and services running on a Windows computer and Microsoft apps and services, and in a few small cases, Samsung's apps on a phone, an Android phone, not an iPhone. This would only be an Android phone. And, you know, that exists. Anyone who's used the Your Phone app on Windows can tell you you can go in there and you can make and receive calls through it. You can make and receive text messages through it. You can look at your photos and download them from the phone. With certain phones, you can run a mirroring experience where the phone display is in a window and you can access the phone. And that stuff's really interesting. Like it's interesting. And for certain people, super useful for sure, especially the text messaging part, right? Being able to use your computer's keyboard and type text messages. Excellent. The problem is maybe most people don't need that level of integration, right? So if you want the text messaging bit, Google's Messages app is available as a PWA. You can put it on Windows and you can send text messages just like you can with your phone. And in fact, it's more reliable, frankly. They don't have the phone bit. But with regards to all the other stuff, I mean, if you're using typical productivity experiences, right? So Microsoft Teams is the big new thing, but also the classic Office apps like Word, Excel, and PowerPoint, OneNote, Microsoft Outlook for mail. You're a Microsoft 365 user, whatever, OneDrive for storage. Those things are available on the PC and they're available on your device. There's no level of integration you're going to get that is special to Microsoft that you couldn't even get on a Chromebook. I mean, you could run a web browser, Chrome, obviously, and go to the office.com, access all your Word documents. You could run Microsoft Teams web client. You could, you know, it's possible that as excellent as this is in a way, the level of integration you do get by choosing Windows 10 on your phone and then using a Android phone of any kind is in some ways not necessary for most people. I don't know. I mean, like most people, if you were sitting in front of your computer and you were working on a document and you got a little trill happened and you got like a text message, and you picked up your phone, and you're young. I mean, you could type on a phone. You pick it up, and you're like, dit, 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 and you answer, and you put the phone down, and you go back to work. Is that inefficient? Is that so inefficient that we need to have an app on the PC that duplicates this so you can not, you know? I mean, I guess. I mean, it would be a little better, right? But for most people, is it necessary?
I think for most people, no. I mean, great example. Do you know how many people that I know that have Macs that do not use Messages on their Mac? I was actually surprised.
Not because it's not good, It's just not necessary.
It's
right?
not necessary. They don't feel like doing it. And I'm actually, I was shocked. I thought that's one of like the key features. Like for me, that's a key feature.
And it will be for a lot of people, but I had the same reaction. I'm not using an iPhone full time now, but I review at least one every year and sometimes more than one and use an iPhone for some period of time. Some years I do use an iPhone, you know, but now I do not. So the times I've used an iPhone where you sign in with your account, you're all blah, 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 you're up and running. And then one day I'm like reading a Kindle book on my iPad and a little notification comes down from messages because someone sent me a text message. And it's like, that's when I remember to turn it off. you know, like I don't want that on there.
Yeah. It's fascinating
to me. Teach his own. And by the way, I'm not saying my approach is right. And again, this is just like the Surface Duo conversation. Different people do things different way. All the Europhone stuff that I sort of said for many people is unnecessary. There are people listening or watching this who are going to say, hold on a second. That stuff's crucial. It's why I use Windows 10 and an Android phone. I love that. You know, Google is working on that level of integration for Chromebook, which is kind of weird. They haven't done that yet, but they're going to have more native functionality on Chromebook soon as well. I mean, yeah, because some people will like that. But I just feel like, I don't want to say most, but a large percentage of people would just say, I don't really care.
Yeah. You brought up the your phones aspect mm-hmm. of Android on. So you got a Samsung Galaxy Note 20, correct?
Yeah.
I want to get your opinion on this and kind of talk about how that integrates, because you have a pretty interesting screenshot of how it integrates within your phone. And the title is not the Android app solution we were looking for. You want to go into this? Because I was very fascinated by this.
To be clear, I should say, first of all, at a high level, I like the Europhone app. I think certain people are going to love having it. Even myself, I will admit that the convenience of being able to type a text message, especially on the computer.
Do me a favor. Can you explain what it does, what the Europhone app does?
Yep. So it's a little bit complicated to kind of connect these two things, but you have a phone and you have a computer. So through the computer, you're sending, it's sort of like pairing with Bluetooth. You know, you send requests on each side and you accept it and you've made this connection. And when you do that, you have choices about what stuff you can see on your computer. So the choices are notifications, which, by the way, gets annoying really fast. So your phone notifications will actually pop up as notifications.
All
on your computer.
Notifications.
Yeah, it's a little, that's a little much. Yeah. The two that I think are super important and there are three things I think that would be super important to many, many people are the messages, phone calls, and photo integration. So messages and calls work in a similar fashion. You have the ability when a message or call comes in to respond to it on your computer instead of your phone. You're not going through the earpiece on the phone or through the keyboard on the phone. You're using your computer. So if I have this microphone set up and I'm using headphones. If I was on a call, it technically is going through the phone, but for all intents and purposes for me, it's happening here on my computer. I hear it in here. You know, they hear my voice on this speaker, on this microphone. So that stuff to me is just, it's common sense. Like if anyone wants that, like that's a great reason to use it. I think the one thing that's semi-universal that's really cool is the photos functionality. And what that does is it shows you the photos that are on your phone, you know, in a window on your computer, right? And obviously, it's obvious why that would be useful. So that's just kind of a nice thing to have. It's just really neat. But of course, what they're doing over time is they're expanding the functionality. And what they often do is, and by often, I mean the last 2 years in a row, they go first through Samsung. So they have this partnership with Samsung. And so there's a new apps view. And what it does is it just gives you a grid of apps. And these are the apps that are installed on your phone listed in alphabetical order. And you double click one and what it, I'm sorry, I got to step. Let me, I'm sorry.
Yeah, go ahead.
I've already screwed it up. Before there was an apps feature, there was something called screen mirroring. And what that does is it just brings up your, a remote desktop view of your phone. So it's a window that's shaped like a phone and it's your phone. And if you have a touch-based PC, you can touch it. You know, it's cool. And, you know, the home screen, the lock screen, all the apps, you know, it's your phone. They've kind of expanded on that with this apps view, which for now is unique to Samsung. So in that view, what you're doing is you're double clicking on the app icon in the window on your computer. And what it's really doing is launching that screen mirroring functionality, but it's supposed to go right to the app. So it's really just a shortcut. When they described this originally at the launch in the beginning of August, what I thought you were going to be able to do was have all different app windows, you know, on screen at the same time, but you can't. You can only have one because you're just mirroring the screen. And in my experience, what's really kind of crappy is like my screen's locked right now. So if I go to run like Instagram by double clicking on it, and I'm trying to do this live, and of course, yeah, it goes. So it connects to the phone. This is going really slow for some reason.
So it's essentially it's mirroring your display.
It's just mirroring the phone. Yeah. And this has taken a long time. This is a great demo. Not that you can see it, but it just says just a moment. But the problem I've had is like my phone's locked, right? So it doesn't pass through any authentication. Like, so the way it's been working is if the phone is locked, you see the lock screen and you have to unlock it. Mm-hmm. So you can lock, you can unlock it on the computer, or you can go to the phone and unlock it. But either way, it's just mirroring the screen. And it's like, seriously? So once you unlock the screen, the app, in this case, Instagram, which, by the way, still not running. it's having a technical problem. It just doesn't work very well. That's the problem. So, you know, the basic stuff that I've tried so far in the past on your phone, like messages and phone calls, works pretty well. The photo thing is just obvious. That works great. I was really looking forward to this because I think, you know, one of the things we're kind of missing on Windows is a robust mobile app platform.
Yeah.
And for a shining moment there, we were going to get Android apps on Windows, and then they decided it was too good and they got rid of it. And I thought, well, maybe this will replace it. But
did
now that
find
I've
out
seen
what the,
it,
what the final reasoning on why it didn't work, because I remember reading it was a problem with the emulation. It was going to do hardware emulation and software, and it was just not working outright. Was that?
No,
was
it's, that it was the opposite reason? Of that. It worked too well.
It worked too
well. So, yeah, what they had done was, at the time, what they were trying to do was provide developers with ways for them to bring their apps from other platforms to Windows. So they had these so-called like bridge technologies. So it's kind of stupid, but it worked and used to work differently depending on what platform you were talking about. So there was an iOS solution, there was a web solution, there was an Android solution. Mm-hmm. And then also a desktop solution for desktop apps. They wanted to get more apps in the store. So you're a developer, like you made a great iOS app or whatever. There's some solution where you can take some portion of the code for that app and bring it over to Windows, and then you do some little other special magic and it comes out as an app for Windows, and that's, you know, it would benefit Windows. But what they found on Android was they could just run the apps. Like the apps just ran. And so they were like, oh, we don't even have to worry about bringing apps to the store. Like we can bring the Android apps to the store. Yeah. And of course the guys running Windows at the time, Terry Morrison, et cetera, were like, yeah, no, that's not, it was too good. They had to get rid of it. They're like, the goal of this is to get people to use our apps platform, you know, Microsoft's app platform at the time. This is several years ago now, but this, because this was too good, it would inhibit a reason for developers to adopt the Microsoft app platform. If people could just run Android apps on Windows, why would they ever make Windows apps? Yeah. You know? So they got rid of it. Now, I think honestly, if they had come up with that today,
it'd be a different story.
They would ship it that way, because who cares? You know, they've come to understand that strategy of getting people to create Windows apps was stupid. But at the time, that was job one. And that team, which was called Project Astoria, which was
Astoria, you know, Queens?
Like, Astoria, yeah. Not Hysteria, the Def Leppard album, but Astoria, was disbanded. And like the people that worked on that are all over the company now. They're all over the place. And unfortunately, they should have sat on that, because God, running Android apps on Windows would be great. You know, it's too bad.
Just want to let you know, as we speak right now, in front of Jeff Bezos' house, they're protesting, mm-hmm. and they brought a guillotine out, and they're setting up a guillotine in front of his house. Mr. Amazon is not going to have a good day when he sees this. Just seeing this right now being posted. What is happening? Here's the thing. I used this about, I want to say, a year ago, the first time. And I got to tell you, it was not great a year ago. The My Phone app. Your phone app, I'm sorry. Yeah. But yep. they've done within the last, I want to say 8 months, there have been tremendous feature changes and yeah. fixes. Obviously, listen, like he's experienced, like that was the first time I used it. I attempted to use it, I want to say like 3 months ago, and I totally got distracted. I do want to set up my Android on this, but I do think there's a place for this, especially on Windows. If you are kind of suggesting, you know, a lot of your user base is going to use Android devices rather than iPhone, which I don't know if that's true. I don't think that is. Right? Like, do we know if there's a hard number of how many Windows, regular Windows desktop users or laptop users are on the Android or the iPhone side?
Yeah.
I'm curious.
No, I bet it's split pretty evenly in the United States for, you know, unfortunately, Microsoft can't do this stuff for the iPhone. You know, they would if they could, for sure. I mean, it's a closed platform.
Do you think they should if they could?
Yeah, I do.
Okay, let me,
because they're alienating half of their audience, right?
Let me step back. What if the partner that they've intended on mobile devices is going to be Android going in the future? Which I do believe that. I do believe that Android will be their mobile platform.
No, so I'll just use Microsoft's own language against it. You go to where your customers are. And if half of your customers are on iOS, which they are, at least in Western Europe and the United States, you got to meet them there. You know, so Microsoft for its own first party stuff can go Android. And because of the nature of Android, where things are just easier, it's a more open platform. It can do more on Android for sure. It doesn't mean you stop doing that stuff, but you can't just give up on iOS. You know, like it's just too big of an audience. It would be, it's a business mistake to do that. In fact, honestly, you talked about how awesome this phone, your phone thing has gotten in it. You're right. But if you have an iPhone user, it's useless. And and if you have an iPhone, and I wish they would address that, you know.
Yeah, me too.
Somehow.
Me too. So I do want to talk about the new Amazon device that was announced today, their health tracker called the Halo. But before we do, I want to let everybody know, guys, if you enjoy the show, you want to help us out, you want to keep the show limited with the ads, so we're not bombarding you every 15 minutes with an ad, which I would love to do that. But you know what? I would prefer, I have no problem doing it, but I would prefer not to. But thanks to you guys on Patreon, patreon.com/whatthetech. That's where you guys go. Fund us as little as $1 per episode. And it helps us along going along the way. It keeps us, you know, making a couple bucks doing this, and allows us to take, you know, an hour or so from our Paul's very busy Thursday to do this with me, which is always great. And on our Patreon, we do a bonus show called What the Tech, where we talk about everything and anything from my midlife crisis car purchases to things happening in the world to just sometimes just food. Somebody asked us if we could do a food show again, because they really like it when we talk about food, because Paul and I are big time foodies. I'll tell you that. Go to patreon.com/whatthetech, and you can go and fund us there. Also, if you're on Instagram, Paul, I don't know if you saw this, What the Tech has an Instagram page now.
I did not see that.
Yep. Today, What the Tech has an Instagram page. What the Tech, it's instagram.com/whatthetechnews, where we'll be posting, you know, news updates, things that are getting announced, and then show updates and things like that. I think we have like 20 followers. I just made the page. I should have done this years ago. I never thought we needed to be on Instagram, but apparently now everybody's saying you need to be on everything. So instagram.com/whatthetechnews, you could go and sign up there. Subscribe to us. I want to talk about this device because it's interesting. There's no display. It's called the Halo. They're stealing it away from Microsoft.
I know.
Microsoft could have had this.
Microsoft should release a video game called Prime.
Prime. I think they do, no? Why don't they? This device is going to sell for $64.99 right now. Introductory limited time offer, right? Early access. It's going to normally retail for $100, and there's going to be a subscription service for $4 a month, $3.99 a month. I posted a link on Twitter if anybody's interested in this. Here's where I fall on these fitness bands, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't have an Apple Watch because I actually, whenever I'm terrible with I don't like wearing a watch. Right. And when I do wear a watch, it's generally in a meeting, and I'm wearing an actual watch. If I'm going to a meeting, I'm not wearing an Apple Watch. So right now, I mean, it could change, right? I've attempted to wear these fitness bands and smart watches. I just never do. So the device isn't really something that I will use every day. However, is there a market in 2020 for a dumb? I'm using the term dumb, but I don't mean that it's stupid. Yeah. Right?
Well, screenless. It doesn't have a display.
There you go. Displayless health tracker that you pay a monthly fee for. Is there a market for this? And does it do a better job than 85 million other devices on the market? What do you think?
I am wondering the same thing. So with regards to having something on my wrist, I also don't like larger watch size devices. I wear a Fitbit. What is this called? It's just whatever it is. It doesn't matter. Fitbit. And it's okay. The problem is there's no way you could see this. No, you can't see it. So there's a primary display that's easy to read. It's black and white, right? So it's grayscale or whatever. But there are these tiny bits of text that are very dark, and you can't brighten the screen enough to see it. So when I go to the gym, the two things I want to see are my heart rate, right? Because when I'm lifting weights, I wait for it to go below a certain number before I start another set. And then I want to see the time. And those are on the same screen, but one of those numbers is really tiny, and I can never see it with all the glare in the gym. And I'm always kind of moving it around, covering it and trying to see it. And it's irritating. And you can't configure this. There's nothing you can do. So my wife got a Fitbit Versa 2, which until this past week was like the most recent version of that. It's color. It's a watch size, And I was really curious about this because I've been thinking about it, but I don't like I don't want that larger thing on my wrist. And this week, Fitbit announced a Versa 3 as well as a higher end version called a Sense, and then some more of these things. And I actually pre-ordered a Sense because it does all these other things, different types of monitoring. And I'm going to give it a shot, But then Amazon announced this thing, and I'm looking at it, and it's like, huh. So it's interesting because Amazon does things in quirky ways when it comes to hardware, right? And they do things in kind of cheap ways, right? And cheap has two sides to it. There's cheap literally, which means low quality. And then there's cheap that means inexpensive. And Amazon's things tend to be both. Although sometimes if they make them long enough, they'll start making nicer versions. Like they did that with the Kindle. They did that with the Echo speakers, So this thing to me, it actually looks nice.
Like, yeah, it doesn't and look you can bad get different. All.
Yeah, it's attractive. There's nothing to look at except for the band, right? And you can get different bands. So if you want like a sporty kind of a band, like you would get on Apple Watch, you can get that if you want that. So that stuff's available. I like that. And I guess like that whole thing I was talking about where I kind of micromanage it when I'm at the gym, like I look at this thing a lot. I look at the app a lot. I kind of hover over it, and I'm trying to imagine like, could I use a thing that I don't look at? Like could I even use such a thing? Like it's probably not like that hard from like a, just a heart rate perspective. Like if the heart rate goes up, some period of time elapses, the heart rate's going up and down, but it's, up a lot, probably exercising or having a heart attack. And, so you get, you get credit for the exercise. Like it's probably not hard to do that. Like Fitbit does a good job of automatically recognizing that you're going on a walk or a run or whatever. Like they can do that. But Fitbit, I don't think can notice that I've gone to the gym. Like even though my heart rate will suddenly spasmatically go like this before it kind of levels off when I'm done, I don't believe they would ever give me credit for exercise for some reason,
Yeah.
As a thing, like call it out as an exercise. So if this Amazon thing can do this, it's interesting. By the way, $99. So, this thing was probably 150. I don't pay Fitbit for a subscription, though they offer one. The watch is $300. It's expensive. It's not like Apple Watch expensive, but it's expensive. If you get in on the early access program, you can get it for $65 and you get 6 months of that subscription for free. So I'm going to try to do that because I just want to see what it's like,
Yeah.
Because I'm curious, but man,
some of the things, here's what's interesting.
There's some weird stuff. Like, yeah.
The wording that they use is interesting, and I haven't seen Amazon do this, but one of the aspects that they're selling on this is the body fat composition, right? And that's a big deal.
That's the first thing.
Okay, that's a big deal because you can't tell by today, but a couple years ago, I was very much into fitness, and I had a friend that's a doctor, and I used to do the body fat composition thing on a machine that he had for like $10,000. So you used to get on this thing.
Oh, I did. I did one in water one time. You used to do it by like displacing water, you know?
Well, no, this one, you stand and you hold these rods and you're barefoot, so it breaks down whatever. It does whatever.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. No, dude, I'm talking about the Dark Ages. Of course, they have.
You're talking about the Dark Ages. I'm talking about like 5 years
this
ago.
This is like the 1980s. No, of course. They have computers now. No, I get it. No, so, but so, by the way,
their marketing here, it says a better value, comparable clinical body fat analysis averages $80 per scan. That's what it says on their website. And well, I go, dude, probably this true. Is not going to give you the same breakdown.
Well, but here's the thing. So this the first thing you do with this, from what the way I understand it, because I obviously don't have it yet, is you actually step one is body shaming. You actually use your phone to make a 3D model of your body, which will then be represented in the app. So you actually have to look at it. I can't think of anything worse than a virtual view of myself from like 4 feet away. Like I can't
unless you have like 10% body by, fat, you know?
Yeah. But I mean, seriously, like you walk by a store window and you can see yourself for a second and you're like, oh Jesus. Like that's the app. Like you have to look at that.
Oh, this is for like, beautiful to me, people, that would be not terrible. Like us. This is for the beautiful. This is for the Instagram fitness.
Well,
models.
No, I mean, this is for, no, it's not. The one on Instagram is going to buy a $65 Amazon fitness like this. No, this is for normal people. And by the way, I on that level, I will look without knowing how well it works, et cetera. I will at least say I there is an unserved market there for sure. Just normal people, right? People like Amazon is the online Walmart. It's the average folks, you know, it's where you go to save money. I mean, we shop there all the time. They obviously have great deals. So I'm curious about it. They're going to do all the monitoring that you would expect, all the usual stuff, you know, heart rate, sleep, et cetera. There are microphones. It's actually going to do a mood assessment. And I'm not sure exactly how this works, but
depending on how angry I am when I speak.
Yeah. They're going to. So I would imagine like on a podcast for me, but for some people, it might be like a customer service experience.
Yeah.
I don't know how it communicates this. If it just buzzes or something, but it's like, hey, you need to settle down, okay?
I can't wait till some retailer the tone forces- of your
if that's the case, dude, it's going to electrocute me. I'm going to be sitting there like shaking the entire
Some
you know,
employer
time we're doing
is going to have this as a mandatory thing, and they're going to evaluate all their retail employees' moods, and then they're going to buzz you when your mood drops a certain point to keep you in check. I'm telling you, this is it. This is what happens.
Okay. So, I mean, look, it's a consumer device. There's no central management of multiple people or anything like that. Thank God. But, I'm curious about it. Like when you hear I'm a fan of Sonos, you know, but if Amazon starts getting a little higher end with their speakers, which they did with one speaker, you start to pay attention because they're not there yet. Right. Like the nicest Amazon speaker is not as good as the cheapest Sonos speaker yet, but they've gotten a lot closer than ever. And then after a while, you're like, well, hold on a second. So for the price of like one Sonos speaker, I could get like a 5.1 surround sound with Alexa built in. That's
not bad.
People are just going to choose that, you know? Yeah. And this, you know, you never know. They bombed in smartphones, but I feel like they have been peppering us. It's like a bombardment from space. You know, every September they have this massive announcement. Here's 117 new Alexa powered devices. Everything from a little in-ear thing up to
a microwave
refrigerator or something. Yeah, exactly. So,
fascinating.
It's possible.
By the way, talking about Amazon and you were talking about speakers. Can I tell you, I ordered a very inexpensive Bluetooth speaker that I'm blown away by. I ordered.
What is it? What's the brand?
Anchor.
Oh, yeah.
Anchor Soundcore 2. It's a Bluetooth speaker, 12-watt stereo speaker. You can pair it. You can make it stereo if you have two of them. It's waterproof, 24-hour
play time. By the way, that thing you just said, that's crucial. So I asked what the brand was because we go to a restaurant where they have outdoor seating. They have little JBLs. They're just like tubes. They probably cost $150 a piece. I have no idea, but they're just Bluetooth. But they have one like in a corner of the yard, and they have another in the corner of the yard. And like I said, we have Sonos speakers. So my wife and I sit out there and I've commented more than once, like, these things sound great, but how are they doing stereo separation? Because you buy these things individually and Bluetooth is like usually a one-to-one connection. Like, how does that work? And I looked it up. JBL has a a solution for this. So the Anchor thing you're referring to, they must be doing something to enable stereo pairing.
Yeah.
Because you could just buy one, but if you buy two, you get the pair.
It pairs it, yeah.
I think that's huge. That's great.
It is huge. Yeah, no, and I ordered a second one. I haven't set it up. So I got this for the outside bar.
How big? Show me roughly how big.
Actually, you want me to go get it? I'll go get it right now.
Yeah, go get it. I'm just curious.
Hang on. I'm going to run out the door and get it. This is live, guys. Here we go.
Dun, 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 dun. Hopefully it's not in the backyard, eh?
Video
right.
Radio, dead air.
Yep.
We'll edit that out. Okay. So here it is. It's tiny, dude. Look at this.
Oh, that's way smaller than tiny. I thought it was. That's hilarious.
Look at this.
I thought it was going to be like a big brick thing.
No, look at this. Tiny.
How much was that?
$39. $39. And that's why I'm singing its praises, because for $39, it's a really good speaker, and it for $60, it's a good speaker. For $80, it's a good speaker. But for $39, and by the way, they're not an advertiser. I was just shocked how good it was. And the fact that when I turn it on, it works. Like, I don't have to repair. It doesn't fall out of sync. I was shocked how well it worked. Because I've had a nightmare with Bluetooth speakers. I mean, I stopped buying Bluetooth speakers because they're terrible. The quality is never that great. And this is actually very good. Sing the Jeopardy.
I mean, that's less than half the size of the thing I was talking about, and those aren't particularly big.
No, this is very small. I posted a link in the chat, and I'll have a link in on the show notes, because I posted it yesterday, and I had so many people message me like, dude, I have those speakers, and they're freaking great.
I love that these are stereo. I might.
Yeah, dude, buy it.
I might have to think about this.
Yeah, and it's totally water. I keep it outside. That's why I ran. I ran out, right. And it poured rain, and it's fine.
It's funny. My wife wants something outside, and you know, we could get like a Sonos Move if I wanted to get a new mortgage
go with this.
Or something.
I'm telling you, go with this.
Yeah,
$39.
Interesting.
It's good, and it's better than enough. Good enough.
Send me the link. I saw you. I think I saw this somewhere. You must have put it somewhere, but I thought it was big.
No, it looks it. Actually, I thought it was going to be bigger when I got it, and I was shocked how little it is. But super powerful, like. I was pleasantly surprised, and it's rare that happens, right? Especially us, because we review these things and we look for the things that we don't like. I absolutely love it.
Anchor's great. Like, they make great. They've always made great peripherals and like power things. You know, what do you call them? Portable power units and so forth.
Bob Rowe in our chat room recommended it. He's like, hey, check this out. I was like, okay, let me do it. So, if that was a pick of the week, that would be my pick of the week.
Well, it could be a pick of the week.
I guess that's a pick of the week now. $39.99 has a $2 coupon on Amazon right now. So they got a blue one that's more. So if you want a blue one or a red one, you're going to pay a couple bucks more. But
it's also a newer version, has 20 watts.
Is it? Where? Which one is it?
What's it's the name? Linked in the, if you go look at it on Amazon. It's on like the next thing down. No, it's right under it. Like if you look right in the middle there, right below the description of the product, it says...
Yeah, the Boost, the Soundcore Boost, and that would be $49. Yeah. But it's not waterproof. This one is not waterproof. Yeah, that's why. Oh no, it is water resistant.
No, it is water resistant. IPX5.
Yeah. So this might, and it comes with a remote. No, that's the top of it. Yeah, this might be. It's a little bigger.
Yeah.
But like this one is all rubber. I don't know if the one that they're showing, like this whole thing is rubber.
Oh, man. In a case it wasn't clear what the problem and the benefit of Amazon is, there is, of course, an Amazon Basics alternative that's only $20.
Oh, really? Bastards. What's the name?
It's called Amazon Basics Portable Wireless 2.1 Bluetooth Speaker. I don't know. It probably doesn't do stereo pairs, though.
Let's see. Basics. I forgot how to spell Basics.
Charge real battery. Yeah, I don't think it does stereo pairs.
Bluetooth speakers.
Stereo pairing through Bluetooth is like the holy grail.
Yeah,
as far as I'm concerned. I mean,
$29. I'm willing to bet this is probably as good as the one I have.
Yeah, but I really don't think it's going to do stereos. Stereo pairing. Like, that's the problem.
Yeah. I'm very happy with it. So I have it at the outside bar and it's absolutely perfect. And I was playing yesterday? Just classic rock. What I always play. revving up my Mustang and just listening to hair bands. That's my whole day now. This is what working like from home is like.
The Family Guy episode where he got pulled over for being awesome because he was listening yes. to Panama.
Yeah, that's it.
I got a guy here being awesome.
Yeah. All right, guys. What we're going to do now, we're going to do What the Talk right after this. So if you listen to the podcast, head on over to the Patreon, patreon.com/whatthetech, and you can get access to our all our bonus shows that we do. As little as $1 per episode, you can fund us and help us out. If you are listening live, hang on. We're going to continue. Just do a second part of the show. Paul, anything coming up for you?
No, I mean, originally I would have been going on, I guess, Sunday to drop my daughter off at college, and I was hoping to be out most of that week, but she's going to college in North Carolina. I don't know if you're paying attention to the news, but they're not doing so good with COVID. So she'll be home for a month, and then we'll see if, you know, late September happens. But I got to be honest, I wouldn't be surprised if she never ended up there.
Yeah. Well, my wife's this a year, teacher, you know? And she's in the process of the replanning of how the hell they're going to open the schools. And it's a real, oh boy, it's a mess.
I know there have been people working on this for months, but what it feels like is months went by and nothing happened.
Oh, that's exactly what happened.
That's exactly what
happened. They weren't allowed. So I'll save it on the bonus show. I'll go into it on the bonus show, but it's a disaster. I hope everybody's staying safe and healthy and people aren't losing their minds. And, you know, back to, you know, to end the show, the Microsoft approach to kind of tie in society to this, maybe you should wait a little bit before you react. We should all take a couple of minutes.
Look, I don't get everything right.
That's one thing.
If I could just, I'm going to stake a claim on one thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. You need to spend time with that stuff.
Yeah. Same here. You never see me make a knee jerk.
Well, we can make knee jerk assessments, but I mean, the point is, as more information comes in, you got to change your opinion. You can't just stick. Well, you know, back in July, I said this, so that's what's always right. You know, no.
Yeah. Listen, man, everything changes. All right, guys, that's it for this week. You can follow me on Twitter at Andrew Zarian. You can follow Paul at The Rot. What the Tech GF2 on Twitter. I don't even know.
What the Tech News
on Instagram. Who am I? What is this? Where am I? Follow the new Instagram. We're going to be posting just, you know, little tech stories here and there on there and trying something new on that platform. Also, we're on Facebook. We're everywhere. Podcasts are available. Subscribe to us on YouTube. We're on our way to 10,000 subscribers. It's a huge accomplishment for us, considering we had to restart our YouTube channel about 2 years ago because we made the boo-boo of not splitting all our shows on the GFK network. So we had everything funneled into one page. And you know what, Paul? Advertisers don't like that, and YouTube doesn't like that either. They kind of want to know what they're advertising on and what show. So we have to split everything. So it would be great if you guys could subscribe to the podcast everywhere and helps us out. Until next time, guys, take care.